James is getting all pumped and excited. Okay, I don't know if you guys have ever seen James live, but this guy is crazy energetic.
I'm sitting down today.
I know, that's why
I don't usually do that.
I'm interested to see how that's going to be different than seeing you in person.
I've gone 3 weeks without sitting down, so this is new. Like, it's like there's a desk and stuff. It's great. No, I love it.
Well, there's only so much that you could do in a studio. Like, it'll be hard to kind of move things. Anyway, so we're going to get back on topic. So thanks for coming back. Hopefully that first session kind of walked you through all of the architecture and conceptually how you would connect devices and applications on those devices to the cloud. And in that session, kind of went through storage and all of these various different parts. And back in the day, right, when that first came out, we kind of went out to you guys and said, hey, to get your apps running as quickly as possible in the cloud, you must do 1, 2, 3, 4, 10, 20, 30 different things. And everybody pretty much came back and said, yeah, that's great, thanks, except way too complicated.
Exactly. And one of the, there's especially issues or challenges, I shouldn't say issues, but the level of complexity or how high the bar starts,
right,
when you're doing things like push notifications, authentication.
We exactly.
want to bring that back and make that accessible to people, just to kind of see how easy it is to get started with those kinds of things.
So. Yeah. And it's funny too, because when I first approached James about doing this talk at Prairie DevCon,
Regina represent.
James is actually from Winnipeg.
Brandon, actually. I'm
Oh, right. Yeah. I keep saying Winnipeg. I'm
halfway
sorry.
Between, pretty
I'm
much.
Sorry.
So.
I'm so used to things just centering in Toronto. I'm sorry, guys. I know. I know. Like, and this, by the way, this is why I do these online shows, to force me to think about the fact that you guys connecting in are like cross-country. And so I don't have to focus on, hey, the people in the room I know are from the Toronto area. I know you guys are, because I can see. Actually, I can't see where in Canada you guys are from. I could just actually see that.
But we know that they're watching from all over Canada. There's three
right.
people watching in Brandon, Manitoba right now. So I'd like to thank my mom, my wife, and my brother for tuning
Aww,
in.
That's so nice. Anyway, so going back to this idea of how do we make this stuff easier.
Yeah.
Right? When I sent over to James and I'm like, hey, I know that you're super excited about Windows Phone. And in fact, you've created a whole bunch of Windows Phone apps.
I've created a few, yeah.
Yeah. And I knew you were doing some Windows Store stuff. And I said, okay, hey, what do you think about this? And I can't even repeat the text that came back to me, only because we're supposed to keep this G-rated, I guess. But let's just say, needless to say, I think you were excited, right?
Yeah.
And I think the one line that I probably can repeat was probably something along the lines of, and this is how development should be, I think is what you said.
Somewhere along those points. Yeah, somewhere along that, yeah.
So for the next 60 minutes or so, and depending on the magic of the cloud, and also if he gets super excited, maybe he'll even go, because there's no script to these things, right? So.
But all my presentations are usually prefaced. Like the first part of the title is usually mile a minute intro too. So it's because I just speak so quickly, so.
Point being, for the next X minutes, we're actually going to go through all of this stuff, and James is going to take some of the concepts that I was talking about in the previous section, make them real, but not only make them real, but make them ridiculously easy to do.
I'm all about ridiculous.
I thought he was going to say I'm all about easy, but...
Oh, that too. But mostly ridiculous.
All right. With that, James, they're all yours. Take us away.
Great. Thanks so much, Jonathan. Okay, so we are talking about building connected apps. My name is James Chambers. I am an MVP on the ASP.NET and IIS platforms. You can reach me at Twitter, @CanadianJames, and I do keep a blog at James Chambers, www.jameschambers.com. But I also, I'm really pleased to be here today. My employer is LogiSense Corporation. I am the product and community development manager there. We build a product called Engage IP. We specialize in billing and OSS. We work on provisioning, automation, back-end connectivity. We do call rating for VoIP, internet service providers, and the like. And it's great to be able to have an opportunity to look at this technology firsthand and dive in real deep and not only learn about it, but share it with internally with the folks at work, but also with commuters abroad, developers abroad throughout the community. So really appreciate the opportunity to be here and represent LogiSense. So what are we going to look at today? We're going to start just with a simple overview. Azure Mobile Services, Windows Azure Mobile Services, have really strived to reduce the friction that we face when we're developing on the cloud. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about data, structured data requirements that we've got when we're building out applications for multiple platforms. We need it accessible from those platforms. We don't want to be doing a lot of the cruft work that ends up happening on all the projects that we build. Push notifications. Invariably, there's going to come a point in your application where something has transpired, either environmentally or data-oriented, and you're going to want to let your users know. We also got the issue of authentication. When I talk about auth, usually I'm talking about authentication and authorization. We're going to look at authorization a little bit, but today we're going to be focusing mostly on authentication. We'll delve into authorization a little bit when we look at what some of the things that we can do with the data APIs that are available to us and some of the ways that Azure Mobile Services has built up the server side of this technology. And then finally, we'll discuss diagnostics and scale. Because if you have actually built out something that is supported or can support a sustainable business model, you're going to be making enough money and you're going to have enough traffic and enough volume that you're going to be able to start charging for some of that, and therefore you can scale up and deliver a higher performant service or application experience for your end users. So, what is Windows Azure Mobile Services? In this slide, we're gonna kind of look at all of the different pieces that kind of come together. We're gonna get a picture of what it actually takes to build a mobile application. And if you have built for multiple devices in the past, you're already gonna be familiar with these concepts. So today we're gonna kind of hone in and figure out how they work inside of Azure Mobile Services. So the first one is data. We basically want to provide a contextual experience for our users. This is true of any modern application design. Being able to not only store data but share data is a critical piece of a successful application. And you're going to want to make sure that you've got some way to do that. And I mean, for me, the easier the better. So let's, especially when we're on the earlier part of the project at an earlier phase, and we need to hit the ground running. From a notifications perspective, again, you know, there's very real scenarios where we need to think about notifications. For example, if you've been hired by a group of shepherds that they tend to sheep and they have GPS bracelets on the ankles of all their sheep, obviously they're going to want to know when a sheep has wandered away from the herd, and how better to do that than to provide a toast notification. So I like the real world examples, and that's just one of them that you could use when you're building out your app. Authentication. This has been a problem or a sore point. I don't know how many people have said, oh, we're looking at OAuth or something like that, and your eyes roll and they get big because you know you got a good 2 or 3 hours of work ahead of you in order to get things integrated. Or at least you're going to go out there and spend 2 or 3 hours evaluating different packages and finding one that's going to work with your development style. So Azure Mobile Services takes care of that as well. From a server logic perspective, kind of sits there between notifications and authorization, authentication on top of data. And it gives us the opportunity to, using JavaScript, to have server-side scripts that can kind of interact at a database level and intercept all of those CRUD operations, your insert, your delete, your read, your update. And by intercepting those, you can either change the data, add new data, or even modify the query as it comes in, depending on the user's privilege or their level that you want to grant them. Obviously, diagnostics, an important piece of any application, and Windows Azure has always been solid with the diagnostics bit, and they're just propagating that through now to mobile services as well. So we've got a really solid story there for diagnostics. Logging follows suite. Very simply put, there's a module built into mobile services built on top of Node.js, and with just a couple lines of code, you can either be logging errors, warning information out to the console, and it can be helping you troubleshoot things that are going wrong or going not the way that you intend them to. And of course, when you're logging everything and you know that things are going well and you see your diagnostics and your usage is going up, then we need to be talking about scale. Thankfully, we're already sitting on top of the cloud. And it's very easy to go either sideways or vertical and scale out for performance in either way that makes sense for you, depending on what you're seeing out of your diagnostics. A couple of scenarios here that we're going to look at, and why might you be driven to develop using Windows Azure Mobile Services? Well, first of all of our mobile app platforms, regardless if you're on Android, iOS, Windows Phone, Windows 8, other tablets, and the like, we want to be able to provide a back end that we can use commonly across all these clients. You don't want to have to be rewriting your client access tech over and over and over again. So with a very simple startup, and this ties into the last point of rapid development, you're able very easily to put together a cross-platform capable backend and build out your application. The common things that you're going to deal with, authentication, push notifications, structured storage, those are things that you're going to need in most modern applications, especially when you get into geolocation and things like this, because you're trying to enrich that experience and add context for the user. So without any further ado, we're going to build an app. Actually, we're going to let Windows Azure Mobile Services build an app for us, and we're going to have a look at how quickly we can actually get up and running. So I'm going to flip over here to the Windows. This has been changing over the last little while. A few months ago, we had a refresh on the portal. It's looking very metro or very modern UI now. And I'm going to just go into my mobile services. I'm going to create a new one just simply by clicking the create icon. And I'm just going to pick a name for it. So this is the start of the provisioning process. I will have something called, how about Prairie Tasks? So that everybody knows the prairies are representing. There we go. I'm going to create a new database. I'm going to throw it in East US just so that I can avoid a warning in a second here. This is what I'm talking about. When I'm choosing a server where I'm going to throw my database, I want to just make sure they're on the same locality so that we don't run into any performance issues. I'm going to type in some deets here to get me logged in. And we're going to click Create. As I said, this kicks off the provisioning process. So off in the background, it's spinning up what needs to be done on the server side for me. And I'm just sitting here waiting without having to do any of the file new project stuff. This is basically the equivalent thing, but now it's happening in the cloud. From here, I will be able to use my dashboard to access all of the mobile services that I've created. During the preview, I believe going forward, we have the ability to create 10 free Azure Mobile Services. So there's really, you know, little friction and little reason not to try this out as early as possible. So I'm just letting this finish creating here. And as soon as this is ready to go, we're going to drive in. And this is the part where the presentation gods need to smile collectively on me so we can get through this process. I've got, you know, what we're going to do is I'm going to go in here. I've got another one kind of already pre-provisioned here. And we'll come back to that one in a second. So after I've created my my application, after I've provisioned out my service, the next step that I'm going to do is actually get started with development. And the great thing is that it provides a platform-specific project template to kind of kickstart the process for us. Right now, we've got the ability to do a Windows 8 client. We can go with an iOS client as well. And they're already working on other client project templates as well. So we're going to be able to go and just kick off the entire process and within a matter of minutes pull down a Windows Phone template or pull down an Android template. So you can be sure the way that this next 10 days are lining up with announcements here, we're going to see some exciting things happen here as far as platform selection goes inside this portal. So this one is still creating for me. So the next thing that we're going to need to do is kind of download the app and get started. We can either, I'm going to switch back over to the Windows side of things because that's I'm developing on a Windows 8 PC here or a laptop. And I want to build a Windows 8 app. Now, if I already have an existing Windows Store app, I can very easily with a couple lines of code just add a reference to the Azure Mobile Services client back end, and then I just need a line of code or two here to get started and start using mobile services. But if I need to start with a new application, and this is the lowest friction right now, this is the simplest model, then all I do is simply get started by installing the tools. I install the mobile services SDK. These are only a few megs to download. It comes down really quick, and you'll see very easily that it integrates with Visual Studio if you've already got it, Visual Studio 2012. And you do need to be running on Windows 8. So I will point that out for the purpose of building a Windows 8 client. You will need to be running on Windows 8. And then we click our create to-do item table. And I'm just going to check on it again. There we go. Prairie Tasks is ready to go. So we'll continue here. Creating the new app. Create the to-do item table. And then after that's created, I have a couple of kickstarts here for me as well. Now, if I am a XAML developer, if I'm familiar with developing on Windows Phone, or I've done work before on WPF, Silverlight, then C# is probably going to be the way to go for me, because then I can be building the C# plus XAML Windows 8 application, Windows Store app. If I prefer to go the other route, if I'm more familiar, more comfortable working in a web development environment, then I'm going to use JavaScript and HTML. So I prefer to use C#. You can choose whatever your heart fancies. I click download, and then very gracefully behind the scenes, Mobile Services goes off and builds up the project template for a simple to-do application. So you can see here, it just pulls down the project. It is 18K. I'm going to save that. We're going to drill in. Here's my prairie tasks. One thing I'm going to do quickly, just kind of, you've probably run into this before as a developer, but when you download a project or a zip that comes in a zip file, just unblock it first, and then you won't be prompted with every project that you try to open. So I'm going to unblock that, and now I'm going to extract it all, just to let the computer know that I trust the download. And up pops my my folder with the solution, and I drive right in, Visual Studio opens up. And then we'll have a quick look here. As soon as things are loaded, I'm going to hit F5 to run the application. Now, the logo and things like that, this is not an app that's ready to pass store certification, so you'll still have work to do. But what this does do is it gives you a project that's already ready to go, already connected to the cloud, and in particular, your cloud application that you've built, your connection to the mobile services app that you've already provisioned. So I'm going to do give a demo of cloud stuff, and I'm going to hit save. And you can see the very impressive demo there, where it actually just shows up. We added a task, and the task showed up. I haven't proven any magic here just quite yet. So let's dive into the code and figure out what happens. First of all, we got to impress online peeps. Now, I can't do this until we get like 10 plus ones in the chat channel, so if you're logged in there, I'm not going to be able to check this one off, but I've done a demo of some cloud stuff, so I've knocked that one off already. Let's see where this actually lands up. And remember, hit that plus one in there, and I will impress the online peeps, and that's where we'll start. I'm going to head back over to Visual Studio and just stop the application, and I want to show you out on our data here. Our to-do item now has two records, and we have a true completed. I've done a demo of some cloud stuff, and I haven't yet impressed the online peeps. But if, you know, if we don't get to the 10 before the end of the show, no problem. You can send me an email after, put it on Twitter. It's all good. Eventually, I will click off the complete flag on this app. How does it work from an application perspective? Well, first of all, as I mentioned, we have to have the Windows Azure Mobile Services client SDK installed. So that's that download provided right from the mobile services portal. We're going to have inside of our assets just the logos or the any of the images that are needed by our application. You replace these obviously when you're building out your own application. Probably going to not do a to-do app when you're building a real one as well. We have a standard styles.xaml. This is part and parcel in most Windows 8 projects, most Windows Store projects, and the reason is just so that we can easily access and take advantage of things like operating system styles, colors, themes, fonts, things like that. But then there's also a task.xaml, so I encourage you to explore there and find out what's going on, because they've actually created a couple of classes to support the UI and things like that. So that's what's in our common folder. Now, our mainpage.xaml has a corresponding backend that helps us deal with our click event handlers, wires in some calls to the back end as well to save and update data. And then finally, we've got our app, XAML.cs. And this is the one that I'm interested in right now. We're going to have a look here, because what happens at the top of our app class is we get a static field called mobile service, which is of type mobile service client. And you can see here that the project template has already, that's been generated for me, has already stuffed in my endpoint for the application, as well as the private key, the client secret that I need, the application key. And this is required in order for our service to communicate with the back end. Other than that, there's not much going on here at this point. We're going to add some other interesting features, but for right now, that's basically what we have. How did we do? Did we make it to the plus 10? Oh, we're not there. So that's okay. I won't mark it off just yet, but we will go in and run the app again. I'm going to have one more to-do item here called figure out a way to get plus 10. I'll lower my standards later to 3 if this doesn't work out. So we'll wait for you guys to finish that one. But as we go, we'll progress the application and we'll have a look at a couple of things that we can do. So back to Visual Studio. We're going to take a break here from the code. And we're going to flip back and look over at the slide deck again and talk about structured storage. So the mobile service backend actually creates a SQL Azure database for us. You saw that creation process where it automatically went and provisioned that database for me. And I have the ability to create tables on the fly from within the portal as well. You can use the same database, and when you create your tables, all of your tables will be provisioned by your application name inside the database. So if you don't want to incur any additional charges or you don't have a lot of volume, you're able to use one database inside SQL Azure. Remember, that first one is free inside this test space. Then you've got that ability to do that. Now, the nice thing here is because it is a real SQL backend, you have everything you need in order to build out a data editing experience or connect to the database in other ways. So you can use the portal itself. You can use the SQL portal, which has a few richer tools for working with your data in there. But then you also have the ability to use SQL Management Studio. You poke a hole in the firewall for that database, and then you're able to connect to it from your local machine and connect out to that SQL Azure instance. And then finally, you have the REST API. And while that may not sound like a normal way that you would manage data, what we have to remember is that this is basically an OData endpoint. So you have the rich query capabilities that are provided through SQL Azure. So this REST API is kind of an integral piece here in the earlier pieces, and it will be going forward. It means that you don't need a native SDK for each of your client applications because you're able to easily input, like to insert, update, read, delete your data just simply using REST commands and requests. There is a feature called Dynamic Schema, and what Dynamic Schema does is if you've got it turned on, I'll put my neck out here a little bit, and I'll suggest that if you have it turned on, you might be upsetting your favorite database administrator. But if you have it turned on, as you make requests, the mobile services backend is actually dynamically building out the tables and inserting the data based on the type of data that's coming in from JSON. So there's some smarts going in there to kind of determine what type of field it is, and then it's actually building out the columns for you. But we also have this great ability to dive in and intercept any of the operations that are happening on the SQL CRUD pipeline. And of course, the rich querying capability that's available to us through OData. There's some great modules that are supported out of the box that we're able to use inside those scripting pieces when we're talking about the server and intercepting the CRUD. So the first being MS SQL, and an example might be something like this: select top one from status updates. If you could imagine if you're doing some kind of social piece and you're trying to show the latest status update from one of your users, then you don't want to show all of the updates. If there's somebody who's posted 3 updates a day for a whole year, you don't want to return 1,000 rows of data. And if what we're actually interested in from a client perspective is the last few, then we can kind of jump in here and make sure that the query is limited by by whatever parameters that we want to set out. So this gives us that opportunity to kind of, and we'll have a closer look at this in just a minute. So we also get the these other modules, request being one of them. We have the ability to respond with service, with status codes, which is down below. So we can control the request execution. We can return different status codes. We can use the console to log out whatever we need to for errors or warnings or information. We also have the ability to use push notifications. Right now, the WNS namespace, or the Windows Push Notification Service namespace, is supported via the server-side operations and server-side scripts, and other push notification services are coming. You can already see this happening in other areas of Azure, where you're able to send out notifications, push notifications for other platforms. We can expect that these will likely migrate their way into the push notification namespace here as a module, part of the Windows Azure SDK that's built on Node.js. We also have tables, the ability to get an instance of a table, query against it directly, as I was doing in that last frame, and modify issue. We can execute stored procedures if we want to. So we've got this these rich modules, and of course the status codes that kind of let us dictate some of how we want to respond to the client's request, their HTTP request. Now, right now we've got some pretty primitive types. We have our numeric types are going to be converted to float, and that's how those are going to be stored in SQL Azure. Boolean stored as bit, datetime stored as datetime offset, and finally string is stored as nvarchar max. Now, geolocation is a very important aspect of mobile development across all platforms. So we can also expect that down the road we'll see other improvements to the type mappings that will open up things for geospatial types as well as other data types as well. So let's quickly jump back into the portal here and have a look at how some of this comes together. So I've got my to-do item table, and I want to start adding some more control over what's actually happening when a request is being executed. So you, for every table that I have, I'd have this option to go into the script tab, and from there I can alter any of the scripts. Now you can see this is just a JavaScript method. Again, the mobile services SDK for Node.js was built on top of Node.js. You have a subset of Node.js to use, so you can make web requests if you want to, so you can access other REST endpoints, or you can talk to any of the modules or globals that we talked about in the previous slide in the deck. In this particular case, I have an item. This is the item that's being inserted. Of course, we've got our user if we're talking about authentication. I've got the request itself that comes in. And you can see here, there's a little bit of IntelliSense and some helpers that are happening already. This is going to get better as we go. But as I start to type here, you can see there's some IntelliSense type things popping up and whatnot. So this request is just telling me it's doing that pair and saying, hey, you've got other instances of that in use. Request, so when this insert actually comes in, this is a request to insert, but nothing happens until we actually execute the request. This gives us the opportunity to modify the item. So if I want to here plug in item.date is equal to new date or something like that, or if perhaps I want to say if item.text.length is less than 5, then I could, you know, send back an error message using status codes if I wanted to. So we have the ability, the flexibility to kind of walk over top of that incoming request and build out whatever pieces we need to in order to support our server-side logic on the back end for mobile services. So I just looked at insert, but of course we have update, delete, and read, and the request comes in. There's some more interesting things here, like for example, oh, I'm going to just disregard my changes here. It's prompting me. So there are some capabilities. It's prompting me. If I go into read, for example, I know that my incoming request has a query object associated with it, so I can alter the query and add a where clause if I wanted to, and then finally execute my request. Which would allow me to modify the result set that gets returned from this operation. So very flexible in terms of what we are able to do and control when we're walking through the server-side script of things. We're going to come back and visit these because this is actually a really great segue because we're going to start talking about push notifications. So I'll flip back over to the slide deck really quickly here. And we're going to talk about a couple of different ways that push notifications come into play. Actually, I'd like to show you really quickly on my laptop again. I've got a start screen here, and you can see that there's various live dynamic tiles. Things are switching. Cute picture of my kids there. They're totally spies. They're little secret agents. It's awesome. And these live tiles that are updating, we can see them that, and we know that if you've had a chance to view any of the Windows 8 updates, or if you're familiar with the Windows Phone paradigm, what's happening is there's a push service that is sending out some information to update those live tiles. We also get toast notifications. That's going to be the one that we implement today. And when we lock our computer from the start screen, we also get badges. And those are little just icon-based updaters to let our users know that there's some more information available to them, or something has changed inside your application and you would like your users to know about it. So we got badges, tiles, and our toast notifications, and those are the different kinds of push models that we support. So how does this happen? Well, we've got a couple of pieces that we're responsible for as developers, and we have a couple of things that are available to us free by use of the Windows Azure Mobile Services. Windows Push Notification Service is a great way to support sending out your notifications on Windows 8. Although I'm sure if you've worked with WNS before, you've seen some of the challenges that even Jonathan was talking about earlier today about actually getting all those pieces tied together. There have since been helper libraries that have come out. Things are getting easier by all means, but I want to show you how dead simple it makes things for you as a developer inside mobile services. The other aspect of it, though, as far as the client actually getting something, is we need something rendered for the end user, and that comes in through the notification client platform. For us today, we're going to be talking about Windows 8, but of course, on whatever platform you're developing on, we trust that as application developers that is going to be living on the client that we're targeting, so that we can push notifications to them. Wonderful. So how does this work? Well, on the top end, we have to develop our mobile services. We have to develop whatever application that we are building. And then, of course, we have our application proper itself. And that's where the data comes in that we're going to be, the events that come in, any of the changes to data that come in, that we want to actually start to cycle back to our users. So how does this start? First of all, we need to request a channel URI. This has to happen from our client device. So our Windows 8 application is going to make a request in to the client notification through the client notification platform, and create a channel or a URI, an endpoint, so that we can push something back to at when we've completed whatever we need to do on the server side. We need to register that with a cloud service. This is important. We need to track the channels that have been created by each of the clients so that we can notify them when something important is relevant to their channel. The next thing we need to do is actually authenticate against Windows Push Notification Service, or WNS. And after we've authenticated against it, we will also need to then instantiate the push, which happens from WNS and notifies the client platform. We don't have to actually do any work to make that happen. That's one of the advantages of using one of these cloud-backed services, and it's something that is free to us, being in these green boxes in the bottom, which is okay. We got the blue boxes on the top. Developers like to be on top, so that works. So, we got our toast tile and badge notifications. We need to make sure that we are one of the things that we're going to be doing with either push notifications and later authentication is that we need to make sure that our app backend knows how to talk properly with the backends related to push notifications and authentication. Pardon me. So what we have to do is go and make sure we're registered with the Windows Store program. Very easy to do inside of Visual Studio. And then we're going to share that information with the backend services for Windows Azure Mobile Services. And then we get to take advantage of the WNS namespace inside the push module that's part of our Azure SDK that's built on Node.js. And what this does is it really simplifies our ability to push out whatever type of notification is available on in that namespace to our end users. So right now there's WNS. We can anticipate again as it's happened in other places inside the Azure framework or platform. We can anticipate that there's going to be other types of or there's going to be other namespaces there to allow us to push out notifications. So let's dive in and make this happen. I have already downloaded my Prairie Tasks application. So we have already got it running inside Visual Studio. The first thing we're going to need to do is click on our project. And then from the project menu, remember I said we had to associate our project with the store. And then we have to share our application credentials, our app secret and our package SID, with the Azure Mobile Services portal to allow the two to talk together and so that we can establish this trust. If everybody doesn't know the key, then we can't let everybody be talking to each other. So the first thing we do is we go and associate this app with the store. I'm going to need to sign in here, so I'll do that quickly. And then what it's going to do is it's going to check my store account to see if there is any application that I've already created. Oops. It's going to see if there's any application that I've already created that I would like to make the association with. In this particular case, I have to use the correct email address. It's really picky about these things. I don't know why. Like, it's trying to be secure or something like that. I don't know. But what I want, after I've logged in, it's going to get the list of applications that I've already created in the store. I don't see the one that I wanted here. I've got Prairie Tasks, so I'm going to reserve the name in the store. I just simply type that in, reserve the app name. Once this is complete, I'm going to be able to log in and get my secrets that I need in order to associate the account. So I'm just going to let this churn away. We can't reserve a name at this time. So I am anticipating that there's something changing. Again, we are in the preview stages of Windows Azure Mobile Services. So I will try one more time here and... let me see here if we can get this to run. We'll try this one more time, and if not, I can fail back over to an app that I've already built. But again, this app reservation is going to be how people are going to be able to identify our application in the store. No big deal. I do have one that's already been created here, so we'll kind of progress with that, and I'll show you how we're able to link these up together. So I'm going to switch back to Visual Studio. You can see it tried to update the list. So had I been able to complete my name reservation, my app would now show up here in the list. So I would just select it and then click Next. And it kind of gives me all of the tokens that I need in order to continue. And then I would click Associate. What that will do then is it'll actually go and update. I'm going to cancel out of this wizard. That would actually go and update my app manifest and update all of the package settings for me automatically so that I don't need to work these things out on my own. Some of the key things that it's going to adjust are my publisher and my package name. Now, at this point, I'm just going to quickly pull up Task-O-Matic. That's the one that I've got running right now, I believe. Just double check that in my portal. Task-O-Matic is there. Perfect. Now, this next step here in getting, let me have a look-see here. As I said, we want to associate in the portal here. I'm going to drive into Task-O-Matic, and we need to configure push notifications. So as far as the Windows application credentials go, this is what I'm talking about. We need to capture our client secret. We need to capture our package SID, and we do this through our live Connect Developer Center. So here you can see I've got Task-O-Matic, and when I go into edit it, I get all of the details through the API settings that allow me to see what my client ID is, my client secret, and my package SID. With those things in play, and with those things in place, I simply move those over to this tab here, the client secret and the package SID, and then I'm going to be able to start using push notifications. There's a little bit of code that we need to write in order to make it happen. Primarily, we're going to need to get that channel set up. Again, when we were talking about push notifications, the client requests a channel. The channel has a URI that's associated with it. So we need to stick that URI up into the cloud so that we can keep track of it. And at some point in the future, we're going to iterate over all the channels and notify the users that something has happened. So back in we go to the Task-O-Matic. I will look at the data. You can see here that I've created a table called channel. And in it, I've got simply an ID and a URI. When I create the channel table, I don't actually have to worry about creating the URI because, again, if we head back to our configuration here for Task-O-Matic, the dynamic schema is currently on. So all I need to start to do is to push out data to this endpoint, to this REST endpoint, and the table itself will actually build itself out. Now you might be wondering how you can do that. Well, you can actually do it a number of different ways. The first of all that you could do is just fire up a browser and create a request from scratch. Use something like Fiddler to craft out the appropriate application headers, include your client secret, and build out an object in JSON, push it to the service endpoint, and your data will just automatically be filled out for you. Using those core data types that they've already created mappings for, it'll build out the appropriate columns in the table for us, and then it's going to allow us to start pushing other records to the table, querying all those kinds of things. So I have that in place. With this new table in place, this channel table in place, I'm going to go to my script, and when somebody inserts a new channel, we're going to we've got a little bit of a control thing going on in here, where we've got a callback on a success. Otherwise, we're not going to worry about saving the channel. What we're doing here, if you look at the code, is we're just making sure that the same client doesn't submit multiple channels with the same URI. We don't want to end up with a list of 10 or 15 of the same channel, and then we're going to be sending them 15 toasts. We want to avoid that. So all we're doing is saying, hey, if the URI comes in and we've already got a match on it, then just don't bother saving it to the table. Otherwise, just return it. The other thing just to note here is that if you are working with push notifications, you probably already know that this is not enough to survive in the real world. Channels will expire, so you're going to need a more rich model than just simply storing the URI in the table. You're going to want to try and get a client ID of some kind through after you've authenticated the user and those kinds of things. And you're going to want to rich up your model a little bit. And that's going to be what you want to store in the table. So for us, we are just passing in an item that has a URI. And if it doesn't exist, we're saving it here. The other thing that we want to do is on the to-do list, or on the to-do item, on insert, we want to set up a couple of callbacks. If there's an error, we're going to respond with the error. But if there's a success, then we want this callback to execute, which is just an anonymous function. We're going to respond to the HTTP request and just let it know that everything's okay. But then we're also going to call this method called send notifications. Send notifications is just another JavaScript function that we've included down here. And we're leveraging a couple of interesting modules. First of all, we've got tables. I'll just try and point these out really quickly. We've got tables, and we've got push.wns, and we've got the console as well. So these are kind of the three big ones here that we're using in this particular sample. So again, we execute our request. This actually stores the data in the table. And upon a successful creation of a new task, we respond to the client, and we do our send notifications bit. We pass that item in, and then we go to work on this channels table. We're going to get all of the channels that are stored in the table, and then we're going to for each over top of them, sending the toast. This particular one, we're sending toast text 4, which requires 3 lines of text. So depending on the type of toast that you're sending, you may need to have a default image. You might need to specify an image location out on the web, but whatever it is, you're going to need to satisfy the requirements, and you're able to do that using this WNS namespace inside of the push module. So in this particular case, for each of the channels, we are walking over top of it, sending out the text of the item. That was the to-do task that was just created, and then appending some other text as well. Finally, if this above bit does not work when we execute our for each here, then we're going to do this. We've got some success handlers and some error handlers as well. That's the callback for this function that we're creating on the for each. So if you're familiar with some of the patterns that are common to, for example, jQuery developers, or some of the patterns that you'd be using in Node.js, these are the same kinds of things that you'd be doing. This isn't the prettiest of code, but you can see where we're going with it, and obviously you can abstract it away and make it work for you however you need to. So from a server side, that's what we're going to be doing. From a client side, we do have a couple of tasks to do. And I'm going to jump into my app.xaml.cs. And in here, I have added a reference to networking push notifications. That gives us our client-side libraries that we need in order to communicate with the notification channel, the push notification channel. The push notification channel manager. So inside our onLaunched method, now this is just already in the template, we turn it into an async method. What this does is it allows us to very easily, I don't know if you've worked with asynchronous data before, but when you have to write the code yourself to manage and create everything that you need to do for waiting on tasks and things like that, this is by far an easier approach and a very welcome one to the later builds here in the .NET framework. So I mark my method as async, and then I simply call await. And there's actually two awaits. The first one says, don't proceed on launching the application until we've captured a channel. So we get a channel, and then we're going to add it out via async, via the await keyword as well. Through the mobile service, we get an instance of the channel table, and then we insert async. Very easy for us to insert data into the table. And again, all we're doing is grabbing the URI from the channel. We're creating a new instance of channel, which is just a little helper class that I've created, and all it has is an ID and a URI. Now, in by doing that, I've got everything I need to actually push and register the notification out to this client, because I've now registered my channel with mobile services backend. The pieces that we need to actually insert are already part of our main page .xaml.cs. And I will show you something really quickly here. This is the 2D item. This is the class that we're using to represent our to-do item inside the cloud. This is the default class that's created again through the project template, and it simply has text and complete, so we've got a string and a bool and the int for the ID. Note here that there are some attributes, some data annotations that you can add to your class, to your properties, to kind of rename them or change caps or whatever you need to do in order to comply with your requirements for data naming. I use, when I drill into a new class like this, I just hit one that I haven't seen before. I just hit Control-M. That collapses all of my methods down to their definitions, and now I can see, just to their signatures, and now I can see what's kind of at play here. So I have, these are my three interesting ones. Insert to-do item, refresh my list of to-do items, and then update a 2D item that a client has worked with. There are some button click handlers and the checked click handler for our checkbox as well. So these more or less correspond to these other three operations that we've got. You'll notice that we've got some asyncs on here as well, because we're going to be calling await inside those. In this particular case for update, all we're doing, you can see up at the top here, we have a couple of fields on this class. The first one is a collection of to-do items. So that's how we're binding in our UI. This is what we're using to keep track of what's actually there on the client side. And then we're also keeping an instance or a reference to this to-do table, which when we launch uses that static method, or sorry, the static field in the application class called mobile service, which we defined in an earlier step, or which we had a look at, which is defined for us in the project template. And we're going to get this to-do item table, and that's how we're going to hold a reference to it. Now, locally on the client, because we've got it typed out to a to-do item using this class up here, we can actually use IntelliSense and walk across the fields that are in the table. So a nice touch there. So there's our update. Our refresh simply goes out and gets the latest data from the table. And we've got an insert as well here, where we do our insert async for the to-do item. And we're using that await keyword again. Now, the reason why I come back to this and point this out is because this is what is going to trigger our server-side script. So going back to our portal, my insert script here on my to-do item table, this is where we are intercepting this CRUD operation. And on a successful insert to the table, we are calling our send notifications. So again, my app starts up. It's going to register a channel, save it out to the portal. Then when I create, as anybody who is using the application creates a new to-do item, that gets posted back to the back end, and everybody gets a push notification. So if the presentation gods are smiling on us right now, we are going to have a quick look again at Task-O-Matic, which is already pre-wired. And when this runs, we'll just not talk about that yet because we're not quite that far. But when this runs, we are going to add a new to-do item. So please keep those impressed plus ones coming. There we go. I'll click save, and of course it adds it back up. And you can see right away I get this toast notification up in the corner. Awesome sauce. Okay, I wish you were here. I know this is a live event and you're watching it online, but the entire audience is clapping right now. This is like pretty amazing that this actually worked. Okay, so we've got, actually it's pretty straightforward how it actually worked, and I'm glad it came together so you can see how awesome this is. So this is obviously the text that we've got, we've built out on the portal. Remember, we wrote that with JavaScript. We looped through all of the channels that were saved in the table, and this is the end result. So anybody who's using the application would see that toast, but maybe we want to take things a little bit further. And we don't want just anybody to use our app. We want people to be authenticated so we can capture identity. So let's break away from the application for a minute, and we'll go back to the slide deck and talk about some of the important things around identity. Now, whatever mobile platform you're developing for, what we really want to work towards is reducing any of the friction that exists for users to start using your application. If you want to provide a rich experience, we have to contrast that against the fact that we don't want to make it a complete pain in the butt for our users to start enriching the application for themselves by adding data and therefore context to the actual application that they're experiencing. So authentication is a bit of a problem because we don't want to start a whole new, maybe we don't, maybe we do. Maybe we want to have the flexibility to start building up our own authentication service. But if we want to leverage, let's call it a billion accounts that already exist on Facebook, then why would we want to do all of that cruft work ourselves and build out all of those things when we can just say, hey, assume the identity from one of the other providers that is available? So right now, actually, there's a great drop just in the last week that allowed us to target even more authentication services, which is great. Out of the box, when Windows Azure Mobile Services first shipped, they supported, the story supported Windows accounts, Windows Live accounts, or formerly Hotmail, Passport, those kinds of things. If you have one of those accounts, you were able to log in using the authentication provider that they had provided through mobile services. This last week, just Wednesday last week, I believe, there was a new drop of mobile services, and they enabled Facebook, Twitter, and Google accounts as well. So I think that encompasses nearly 1.5 billion or close to 2 billion, perhaps, different identities that can now use your application just simply by virtue of you registering your application with the authentication provider, i.e. Facebook, Google, Twitter, or Windows Live. What this also does is it gives us the opportunity to control which types of data and when those types of data are going to be going to require elevated privileges. This is important because you don't want just anybody being able to write to your high score table, but you want somebody to check into your social game. So we say anybody who has created or who has logged in, who has authenticated, they are able to use our application. But they are allowed to read from a particular table, but they're not allowed to write to it. And we implement that through the server-side scripts where we get that more granular control. So now we're going to have a look at adding authentication to our application. And we'll flip back into Task-O-Matic here, just because I won't be able to continue the demonstration where we left off in Prairie Tasks. However, we are going to do really quickly is have a look at where authentication happens and how we make it work inside our application. The first thing we're going to do is add a reference to the Live SDK. So just by going add reference, you can see very easily it appears in your list if you've installed that SDK. Very easy to get. There are links for that from the mobile services portal, so you'll be able to get up and running with that very quickly as well. Again, only a couple of megs to download that one. Add the reference to our application, and we are off to the races. So the first thing that we're going to do is add a couple of using statements. These are the two that we're going to need to make use of, Microsoft.live and Windows UI pop-ups. This is because we've got a couple of, during the login process, during the authentication process, we're going to have to pop up a dialog and then confirm that the user has either, yes, they've made it into the application okay, or no, they haven't. From a code perspective, the next thing that we need to do is keep track of the user session. Now, it doesn't matter if you're working with Twitter, Facebook, Google accounts, or the Microsoft account. You're going to get an authentication token, and that is going to be how we allow the backend services to kind of, once we've registered our application there and our client secrets there, that's how the backend service is going to know about our application, and with that ID, ID that we pass in from however the user authenticates, we pass that back in, and now our application backend through mobile services can trust the other application authorization providers that are out there, that are available. So we keep track of our session. That's an important one. After that, we need to specify, we need to create an instance of the live auth client. This is our service endpoint. This is the redirect URL for our application. So when we look at, again, as we talked about with push notifications, we need to make sure that both sides trust each other, that all three sides are aware of each other, I suppose. And our client needs to tell the live auth client where our service endpoint is. Our service that our live configuration in the Live Connect portal needs to be set up so that we've got the correct redirect URL. And then we need to store our application key and our secret in the portal for whatever authentication backend that we're actually providing. So if you've been looking here, there's a couple of things that have kind of been added in here. This one is simply our pop-up. So we've got five lines of dialogue just to throw up a simple pop-up, a nicely formatted pop-up that'll happen. And then likewise, in order to create the session, we've got three or four lines of code here to simply get our to actually execute our request to authenticate, and then pass that authentication through to the app mobile services. Again, that static property, static field that we instantiated when we started our application. That's going to be in there as well. Finally, if the status is connected, then there's we can kind of log out here. If we there's some logic in here to log out if we can. This isn't actually working here on my side, but you'll see that this will kind of facilitate if you've got some admin roles or a developer role or a user role that you wanted to work with. Then you'd be able to log your client out, and then every time you start the app, it'll authenticate you again. Now, I'm going to let it pop up and display a little bit quicker here the next time I run it. But first, I'm going to jump into the portal and show you how we finish rigging that up. So I'm on Task-O-Matic. You'll remember we've already created our push section. Now, because I've put my credentials in here for the client secret, that's the same client secret that we're going to use inside the Identity tab as well for the Microsoft account settings. Now, you'll notice on this page, we've got Facebook, we've got Twitter, we've got Google settings as well. These will need to be filled out for whichever authentication providers that you want to support in the back end. So for me, I've gone in from, again, this edit screen in the Live Connect Developer Center. I've grabbed my client ID and my secret, and I've pasted these in under my account settings. This gives our backend services all the permissions it needs to trust our application and the user who is logging in to use it. So this is great because it simplifies things for us. Now we have an identity. We don't have a profile, but we have an identity from which we can start building a rich experience and context for our users who are using our mobile application. With that in place, we simply dive back in to the Task-O-Matic. We hit F5. Now it's not going to let me log in here because I'm already authenticated, but you'll see, of course, the authentication has happened in the back end, and I am now logged in, and it comes back with my unique account there as well. And now that I'm authenticated, of course, we can see here that we've got our list of data. We are authenticated happily and with a very minimal amount of code that we had to write. So now we've got some counting going on there. Did we hit the plus 10? Did we hit the 10? We did hit the 10. Good. I'm going to mark that off. They might be lying to me. I don't know at this point. We got 11, 16, 6. Six is like, if you round up six, then it's like 10, right? So that's good enough. There we go. So there is the Task-O-Matic in action. We've added very quickly our push notifications, of course, supporting either badges, supporting Toast, supporting our tile updates as well. We're able to connect to this instance of SQL Azure in the back end, very easily work with data and whatnot. One more piece that we want to talk about, that we want to address, and I'll head back over to my slide deck here, is diagnostics, logging, and scale. So logging, scale, diagnostics are all pieces that are critical to monitoring the health of your application, as well as helping you determine how you're going to grow the thing out. So from a compute perspective, if you need to add more power to your application, then we scale out horizontally or vertically. We can increase the power that our single instance has, or we can go wider and add additional instances to make our application more robust. You will also, from a storage perspective, as your application grows, and you know this is a good test for anybody who's developing an application. If you get to a point where you are needing to buy additional processing power, please make sure that you have a business model, or at least that supports growth and the additional costs that you're going to incur, or find some angel investors with deep pockets, which is also a really good strategy if you want to spend a lot of money and build cool tech. From a diagnostics perspective, we get some cool pieces there as well. Right now, it is kind of still kind of basic, but you can work off of some API calls that are there. You can check your CPU time, check your egress and ingress that's happening inside your services, and then as well with logging, the ability to call a console error, console log, or a warn, and write things out as we were doing from within a couple of our requests server side. So let's have a quick look at what some of that looks like in the portal. And this is a portal aspect. So right off the bat here, we can see how many API calls are made, check our CPU time, our data. So these are calls that I was just making, and we can see our usage here in near real time. And of course, you can expand it out over the last just 6 hours if you're looking at something in particular, trying to narrow in, or go back over the last 7 days. Of course, this is Azure. So there will also be all kinds of great PowerShell scripts that you're able to use to help with your diagnostics remotely as well. You do not need to log into the console to look at these metrics. But since we are here anyways, let's have a look at the logs. I was adding some pieces here, so we'll just see here's a successful request that we made and a channel that was created that helps us identify where we're going to be pushing things out to. And that's pretty much the premise there. I mean, we know what logs look like. If you're dropping errors and stuff in there, that's where they're going to show up. So very easy to look at. Tells us where the source is coming as well. This is handy because now we can drive in, see the script directly from here, and see what might have been generating it. So if I knew that there was an error, then you know, again, these event handlers or these completion handlers, either a success or an error. You can also add a complete handler so that you can do something either way just to let keep track of what's actually been completed. That's all part and parcel here. And of course, being tied into the logs, it makes it easy to jump in. So if you start seeing a bunch of errors, that's where you can kind of see it. And from the dashboard as well, again, kind of getting that overview of what's going on. So that's kind of the gist of what we're going to be looking at from a metrics perspective. There is a free offer right now. If you create a free Windows Azure account, there's a free 90-day trial to help take care of any costs that you might incur. But you get 10 free mobile services as part of this trial period offer. So again, using those, there's going to be some limitations. Right now, the slide needs to be updated. It does say it must be deployed to US East, but they've also got US West as well with last week's update. We have unlimited ingress. The daily egress, though, across all 10 applications is limited to 165 megs. So you're going to need to watch your usage on things like that. But again, you can use the portal to make sure that you're monitoring everything and making sure that you're not going over those limits. And in the event that you do have something that is big and scaling and needs performance, then you can also get in touch with the Azure team directly. There's a couple of folks out there who are eager and willing to help, and I can help direct you to them if need be. Finally, from a pricing note, again, these are free, but right now you're running in a shared instance multi-tenant environment. So I'm going to pop really quickly back into the portal here, if that's okay, and just kind of show you on the scale side of things what can be done. But the pricing and licensing in the multi-tenant environment and moving over to a reserved instance is something that will cost you, but it will, right now, I believe it's a 33% price off. So it's a good time to get in if you want to get in early. And there's no SLA. That is a warning that you'll need to be aware of during this trial period. But if you need a hardened environment or whatever, and you've got an application that is trending and growing and needs performance and those kinds of things, then yes, you're going to want to do that. So from the dashboard perspective, scaling up and getting into where the four-fee stuff might happen, I have to switch over to this reserved model. And I'm making, you should see the director and producer are just like flipping out right now because I'm switching back over here. No, over here. It's great. I love it. There's a great show that you guys, it's a show behind the show that you don't get to see. The spending limit warning pops up when I try to switch over to a reserved instance, because when we create a free account, we need to lift the restriction to add any charges to our account. But once that's done, we can slide this guy up and add instances. Or in my database, for example, I can add more room to the database, or I can even flip over to a business model where I get even more data available to me. And now I will switch back to my slide deck. So I mentioned before the SLA. We don't have an SLA during this preview period, and that's simply just to address the fact that they are making updates and upgrades to the mobile services backend on the fly. They're building it out and making it better. However, of course, you'll have three nines when everything goes live. So, in summary, Azure Mobile Services provides the bits of the application in a simple and unified way that allow us to, with a very frictionless approach to building multi-client backend services for our applications, to get started or to integrate it very quickly with existing apps if we prefer. Now, a couple of resources for you here. Actually, you can get all of these through our summary page. So if you're looking at it live right now, top or bottom of the page, there's some download links. Otherwise, the URL will be posted afterwards for you to get to. Just last week, there was a new drop and of mobile services. And this adds some really great features to the mix. I wanted to touch base on with this, Jonathan, just before closing here. We have this idea here that we don't want to just work with Windows 8 devices, but we have Windows Phone devices that are coming in the queue. We've got iOS devices and Android devices, and we want to be able to work with any of those. So imagine when we log in, we create our backend services, and we just download. We've got four projects ready to go, and we're targeting native client applications on all the major platforms.
Well, I mean, and that's the theme too of everything that we're talking about today. And that this stuff is not specifically for Windows 8. It's not specifically for Windows Phone. Now, granted, today, the Windows Phone SDK, the Windows Store SDK is out. The iOS SDK
has been just released as well.
Yeah, and it's still under development too, right?
Right, and there will be improvements to it, and they'll add more things for example, for other push notification services and whatnot, because right now only supported is Windows 8. However, I will say, though, that there's a REST API on the back end here, just like you were noting earlier.
Exactly.
So if you want to get started, for example, working with Shepherds who have ankle bracelets with GPS transmitters, you could, as long as they've got an HTTP stack on them, you could make requests out and track the sheep. So this is a wonderful time for a developer and a shepherd.
I'm trying to think of the logistics of this. So if I'm picturing myself, and I wish I knew you were going to go there. I would have prepared some sort of video where we have like pictures of sheep moving around, and they have these
GPS. That'd be wonderful.
GPS
we could do it in post, maybe.
I don't know. I don't know that I have the time or the budget to get into that.
That's no problem.
Okay, so let's do this. Picture this. Because for you guys who were watching last week, Bruce and I kind of, by the end of it, I don't know how this even happened, but we ended up making some sort of dance, right? So it was like, it was deploying to the cloud and then swapping. So it was deploy and swap.
Okay.
So if
I haven't worked out a sheep dance.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that I want to be honest.
Well, listen, I just, oh boy.
Here it comes.
Okay.
That's close enough. We'll just call that the sheep dance. Gangnam Style, of course.
Oh boy. You see what happens for live shows when you guys vote on the chat. Everybody's cracking up here.
Nice.
Yeah.
A couple of other things really quickly though.
Oh, wait, we're going back to business?
We're going to go back to, we have to, I think.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, sorry. But from a business perspective, of course, added the other, authentication providers. So we've got Facebook, we've got Twitter, we've got Google, in addition to Microsoft Account.
Right.
The Azure module, which is the Node.js implementation that we've got, server-side scripts, they've also extended that out, and they now support blobs, tables, and the service bus. So there's some great news there, especially if you've got long-running tasks,
yep.
If you're allowing your users to submit images or video, those kinds of things as well. And then there was also kind of a surprise announcement. I hadn't heard any of this coming before, but now we've got the third-party APIs that are starting to plug into mobile services backend as well. And this is where things start to get exciting, because now we're lighting up very rich functionality. For example, maybe you don't have a channel registered for push notifications, but your user has submitted a mobile phone number. Well, now you can use Twilio and push out an SMS message. Or if you want to, you can send out emails through SendGrid.
By the way, actually, on the SendGrid note, for you guys who have Azure accounts already, you actually get, I think it's 25,000 emails a month.
A month, yes.
Just by being a Azure subscriber and through our partnership with SendGrid.
That's right, and that's been extended to the mobile services side of things as well. And now with the library available, in the back end, we've actually got the JavaScript library built into the server-side scripts.
Yep.
It makes that much easier to work with as well.
And it still comes back to that theme of connecting apps, but more importantly, making this stuff easy. Right. Like, I mean, you guys saw. Granted, there were the push notifications slightly more complicated.
Little hiccup.
Other than that, you actually should have seen on the chat the virtual class. So that was great. Thank you guys for that. but it's more the... You know, the push notifications is probably something on the more advanced apps. And again, keep in mind, advanced here is all relative, right? The authentication, yeah, you're probably going to have that in a good chunk of apps, but even still not the majority.
It's hard to say. Like, if you want to build a profile and you don't want to roll your own authentication provider, then you're probably going to want to leverage one of the existing third-party providers.
I guess what I'm getting at, though, is that if you wanted to get started right now, and you wanted to build a relatively simple Windows store application where it's just the data, just some of that scaling, the logging business, I think you've done an app from start to finish in about like 5 minutes.
Yeah, it takes. And if you've got the code references that are provided easily through the training kit, then you don't even have to do a lot of the legwork. Other than copying and pasting a couple URLs and secret tokens around, you're good to go. Most of it's there for you as a rough template, and you don't have to do a lot of work to get the database up and running either. You create a table in the portal, and then you start coding against it using classes that we've got, and we've got. Then we've got static types and a compiler and all those wonderful things that allow us to provide IntelliSense.
Yep, and then one more thing on that, actually. We were talking about this in the chat. What you saw, obviously, was the demo was in Windows 8, and it was for a Windows Store app. And then I put an interesting link in the chat there for actual a discussion that we have going on right now on the LinkedIn. It's one of those days, eh? It's like 3 o'clock, 3:30 already, and then the words are just starting to... Anyway.
You know, it's only 2:30 in Manitoba.
That's true. Okay, so I'm going to rewind back to 2:30 and start that again. We were having a conversation on the chat and then subsequently on the Canadian Developer Connection group on LinkedIn about whether you've already activated your Windows Store developer accounts.
Right.
Interestingly enough, not that many people know that... If you already have MSDN, or if you have BizSpark, which means you have MSDN, or you happen to be a student that has DreamSpark, right, you actually get a 12-month Windows Store developer account for free.
Right.
Right? FYI, in case you didn't know, Windows comes out on Friday.
This Friday?
This Friday, yeah.
Which version? Windows 8?
Yes, Windows 8.
I love it. I love it.
Okay, we're going to assume that you knew that. But yeah, so with it coming in 4 days, now granted, you may not be able to pull off an app in 4 days. However, having said that, now with the store being open for Canadians, I mean, this is really the opportunity to put this stuff together with an app that you were thinking about and thinking, well, I'm not going to put a back end because I don't know how, blah, blah, blah.
Well, you don't need to know how so much. You already know how just by virtue of being able to click through this interface. And it's not something that we're taking this and saying, okay, now you don't need to do any work. Because there will be a...
Wouldn't that be nice?
That would be great, you know, build application. No, it doesn't happen like that just yet. You're still going to have to do some work, but this really tries to eliminate the friction. And some of the great numbers that you can think about right now is, you know, there's less than 10,000 apps published in the Windows App Store. You've got really good visibility right now.
For sure.
And it's not as though we're sitting here saying, well, we hope someone's going to buy Windows 8. There's going to be 500 million Windows 8 computers shipped in the next year. And that's just a reality. So you're going to have a really good time right now getting an app out there and in front of as many people as possible.
Yeah.
And Paul's probably over in the side. He's been trying to get me to push my app out. I haven't pushed it quite yet. So,
but you're getting there.
I need to dog food my own speaking medicine stuff. But yes, push the apps out there. Great time to be part of the market.
Cool. So with that, guys, keep the questions rolling on the chat. We're going to take a quick break here so that we can switch up, and we'll be back with Paul's session on actually how the cloud brings a whole bunch of app experiences together. Stick with us. We'll be right back.